The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today, we're going to be discussing plastic pollution, its impacts on our environment and our health, and its connection to climate change. And our guest is the Health Policy Director at Beyond Plastics, and she is Dr. Megan Wolfe. Dr. Wolfe is a medical historian by training and enjoys digging at the historical roots of issues to explain how problems developed and to look for policy solutions. Her decision to focus on environmental policy came from a growing sense that the most pressing public health threat we now face is climate change, and that's a feeling increasingly shared by health practitioners, public health practitioners as well. At Beyond Plastics, she trains volunteers to engage with policymakers and other audiences to take decisive action against plastic pollution. Last year, she served on the Mindaroo Monaco Commission on Plastics and Human Health, compiling a major report to demonstrate the health impacts of plastics. And she also teaches a course on the subject at Bennington College. So welcome, Megan. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Thanks
Good.
For having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. We're really excited to learn all about plastics and what's going on. So, Megan, before you tell us a little bit more about your work at Beyond Plastics, can you please tell our listeners a little bit about why plastics are such a big problem and what makes plastic pollution a crisis?
Sure. So I think that this is actually a three-pronged answer, even though it's a very simple question. So the first one, I think, is what everybody can easily agree on, which is the simple amount of volume of plastic that we have. Plastic production increased by a factor of about 200 since 1950. There are about 10 billion tons of plastic all over the planet now, and it's not going anywhere. Less than 9% of it has even ever been recycled. So it doesn't take much to look around and realize that we've just got plastic coming out of everywhere, and there aren't very many plastic pollution deniers. As a piece of that, the second part would be litter, or what started out looking like litter, but then gradually as we started to understand what's happening in the oceans, we're realizing that we've really clogged the ecosystem with this stuff that can't be recycled, doesn't break down. But then the third one is the biggest and most recent surprise, which is on top of being a litter problem, it's actually really a problem for health, human health, environmental health, all kinds of health, because as plastics fragment down, they make microplastics. And those microplastics are so small that they can actually be carried around in water, in air, and we wind up ingesting and breathing them. So we're realizing that we have microplastics in our bodies and are just beginning to understand what that means. But so far, it's not very good. And that's the third part of the crisis.
I understand that microplastics and nanoplastics, which are even smaller particles, can be found in every ecosystem in the world, from Mount Everest to the Marianas Trench in the oceans. That's amazing.
Yeah, they're literally absolutely everywhere that investigators have ever looked for them. They've suffused every corner of the ecosystem. Because they're so small, they move around in the hydrologic cycle. So they get picked up by rain and they rain down.
Mm-hmm. And so why so much plastic packaging now? Since we seem to know better, was it always like this and it's just a continuation?
No, it wasn't always like this. The answer actually to why now is sort of a surprise. It certainly surprised me when I started looking into the issue. The first answer is fracking. As a byproduct of fracking, we bring up a lot of ethane gas. And that ethane gas used to be considered a waste product. It was just a byproduct of the process. But if you put it through what's called an ethane cracker plant, you can crack it down into ethylene, which is the feedstock for polyethylene terephthalate, or PET, which is one of the very lightweight plastics. You find it in a lot of packaging, or it makes the packaging. And with all that feedstock, the plastics industry managed to create a new market for PET plastic. And that was just in the last 20 years. So that's where we get the really big bump in plastic packaging at the moment.
That's amazing. And I heard one of your earlier presentations to our committee at the New York State Public Health Association. And in the PowerPoint, you talked about that less than 6% of plastic in the U.S. is recycled. And even that much of the 6% doesn't get reused. Why is that? I'm a person who recycles, and I always thought that I was doing such a great job. And this is good. This is really making a difference. What's going on?
Yeah, that's a heartbreaking lesson for recycling enthusiasts. So plastic was never designed to be recycled. When one manufactures plastic, one uses, generally it's about 99% of it is, comes from fossil carbon. So gas, oil, even coal. But it takes a long way to get from a fossil carbon to a plastic fork. You need to add a lot of chemical additives, plasticizers, flame retardants, dyes, all kinds of fixatives. And there are so many of those chemicals, more than 16,000 different chemicals that can go into making plastics. They're not particularly mixable. Every different kind of plastic, every plastic family, like we're used to ones, twos, threes, and so on, has a totally different chemical combination, which means that they don't melt at the same temperatures. They're different colors. They have all kinds of different properties, which makes them very, very hard to, melt down and reconstitute. So the idea that we could ever recycle plastic was actually brought to us by the plastics industry as a sort of backward integration. Around 1988, people had become accustomed to having curbside recycling and being able to easily recycle glass, cardboard, metal. They started looking at the plastic containers that were becoming so abundant in supermarkets and saying, I don't know if I want to purchase this item in plastic because we're simply throwing it out. It can't be recycled. So the plastics industry became savvy at that point and looked back at the families of plastics and said, well, ones and twos are somewhat reconstitutable. So those are the ones that we were told could be recycled. But the rest of plastics, with the exception of possibly fives, are very difficult to reconstitute. Most of them don't have end markets, and so therefore they're largely not recycled even when we do put them in our bins. If there's no market for that type of plastic, it's not going to get recycled.
Mm-hmm. So this is really more or less a marketing scheme, really, by the plastics industry, or kind of.
Yeah, it really was designed to put the consumer at ease more than it was designed to try to conserve any resources, because virgin plastic, first fresh made plastic, as it were, has always been so inexpensive to produce. It's always been easier for producers to do that than it has been to clean and sort and then recycle any kind of used plastic, post-consumer plastic.
So, Megan, in the notes for the show that you provided, it makes reference to your service on the Minderoo-Monaco Commission on Plastics and Human Health, which compiled a major report to demonstrate the health impacts of plastic. What were the major findings of that commission?
Well, the major ones were really not a surprise. We found that plastic does harm human health at every stage of production, use, and disposal. Some of that has to do with the extraction industry, the dangers of extracting fossil carbon. A lot of it has to do with the chemicals used in manufacture and the energy that goes into it. The use phase was a little more surprising because we hadn't thought too carefully about what happens to plastic as it's used. But microplastics began to tip people off. They've made average people very curious, and they made the Minderoo-Monaco Commission curious too. What happens as plastic enters the body? In order to think about that, we had to think more carefully about what plastic is made out of. And I said it's chemicals and fossil fuels, and it's those chemicals that were particularly worrying. About 3,200 chemicals that go into plastic are chemicals of concern, meaning that they can be neurotoxicants, they can be endocrine disruptors, they can be carcinogens. Many of the other chemicals have never been tested, so we don't know what a lot of them do. We know that in petri dishes and in public health studies and in animal studies, when you put many of these chemicals next to human cells, the cells die or they don't flourish. And the animal models don't flourish either when they're exposed to great quantities. But what we don't know is what we don't know, meaning all of these chemicals that have never been studied are also out there. And, you know, we can see the impacts of the ones that we do know and know that, that those are quite harmful. The ones that we don't are a little worse, or rather it's worse not knowing. The thing that really got people's attention on the report, though, was the concept that microplastics, when they enter the human body and they stay there, they can act like tiny Trojan horses because they're always going to be leaching out those chemicals. So as long as they're sitting inside the human body or inside an organ, they're simply letting go that chemical load that is their makeup. And that goes on and on and on. So it's a direct impact from inside the body. We're only just beginning to figure out what that does inside the human body. But again, the lab studies and the animal studies and the public health studies suggest that it's not positive.
So in other words, it could be a lot of ticking time bombs and residing in our bodies.
Quite a lot. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, again, it's when we look at, you know, some are carcinogens, some are neurotoxicants. It's the endocrine disruptors that we're particularly worried about. I can talk about endocrine disruptors, unfortunately, for too long.
Let's do that after the break, because we have about just a few seconds left in the first segment. So let's take a short break and we'll come back and talk a little bit about that. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking about plastic pollution, its impacts on our environment and our health, and its connection to climate change. And our guest is Dr. Megan Wolf. She is the Health Policy Director at Beyond Plastics. And Megan, before the break, we were talking about some of the health implications and some of the findings of the Mindaroo-Monaco Commission on Plastics and Human Health that you served on. And you touched a little bit on endocrine disruptors in plastics. Can you elaborate on that?
Certainly. So endocrine disruptors are chemicals that manage to mimic or block or otherwise disrupt hormones in the body. When you think about the endocrine system, that's a network of glands that creates and releases hormones, and it includes estrogen, testosterone, melatonin, and insulin. That network regulates all biological processes in the body from conception through adulthood and into old age, including the development of the brain and the nervous system. It's the growth and function of the reproductive system, metabolism, mood, blood sugar levels, the immune system, among others. So if your endocrine system doesn't function properly, neither does your body. Just think about diabetics and insulin. So when you have endocrine disrupting chemicals that are floating through the body, even in very, very tiny quantities, they can disrupt these kinds of systems. And as a result, they're linked to many of the chronic illnesses and non-communicable diseases that are really on the uptick in modern society, both in the developed and developing world. So including metabolic problems, obesity, diabetes, appetite, high blood pressure and heart disease are also endocrine related. And then, of course, cancers, any kind of reproductive cancer, breast, prostate, testicular. And then lastly, neurodevelopmental growth, for developing fetuses. As cells migrate through the developing brain, they replicate, they move around, and they create effectively a map that all of the signals that your brain sends are going to be moving along. If that gets disrupted during fetal development, then you wind up with an uptick of neurodevelopmental disorders like autism spectrum disorder or ADHD. All of these kinds of disorders that have endocrine relationships are on the uptick right now. And we're quite concerned about the background level of microplastics and petrochemical pollution in general.
Megan, plastics are a double-edged sword, right? You have all of the human health impacts, but we also it's also a major contributor to climate change. Talk to us about that connection.
Certainly. So, of course, as a fossil carbon product, making plastic, the vast majority of it, is an extraction industry. So it's a reason to keep on pumping fossil fuels out of the ground. And that's a particular problem right now as we're looking at the climate crisis. And really, there are very few people now who aren't in some way alarmed at what's going on. People are making changes, and that's the good news. People are moving over to renewable energy. They're buying electric vehicles. They're getting heat pumps. So the fossil fuel industry is starting to see its margin look threatened. And because of that, they're redoubling the production of plastic. It's going to make up for lost revenue elsewhere. According to their own projections, plastic production is on track to triple by 2060. So we're going to have a whole lot more of it. And of course, it's highly energy and chemical intensive to create it. So the energy that goes into creating plastics is ramping up the climate crisis. And then just having more and more fossil carbons is ramping up the climate crisis.
Wow. So it's kind of analogous to what the tobacco companies did, right? When smoking became, you know, was widespread awareness of the dangers of smoking, people smoked less, and then the tobacco companies transitioned to vaping, which is
exactly
created another epidemic from it.
Yeah, I would say they switched horses, but not really.
Switch products, and they're making more money on the vaping products.
Exactly.
So, Megan, given all of this, what can listeners do? What practical steps can our listeners do, everyone, do in their own lives and in our communities to reduce plastic use, support plastic reduction policy, and help protect ourselves and our families from the health impacts? What can we do? What steps can we take?
In my own life, I've found that as I study this stuff, I get an increasing ick factor about using plastic at all. And that ick factor is helpful because it goes along with all of the advice about avoiding plastic, particularly single-use plastics. The single-use plastics are an enormous part of the plastic pollution crisis. They're the ones that are being manufactured at such a high rate. So, of course, in New York State, we already have a skip the bag law, which is great. So a bag ban. But skip the stuff is also an important component of it. Ulster County has a skip the stuff regulation. I think it's a skip the straw where, mm-hmm. you know, you don't accept plastic cutlery. You don't accept little extra packets of things. Get into the habit of always making sure to skip that stuff. But mostly, try to get more into a reuse habit. You know, a lot of us drive around in our cars, and hopefully some of them are EVs, but keep a mug in your car so that you can use a refillable mug. I know a lot of people who carry around, little metal containers called tiffins, and they use those instead of accepting single-use plastic takeout containers. Those are small habits, but they get you into a frame of mind where you're simply using less plastic. And then also in your culinary choices, knowing that the chemicals in plastic migrate into food pretty freely. It's chemical leaching. So any food that's been standing around in plastic for a while is going to have more of those chemicals in them. It might help to prod you to buy things in glass, in metal, in cardboard, rather than that plastic packaging. Certainly don't microwave any food in plastic or cook any food in plastic, because again, you get that chemical leaching into the food. Once you have those rules of thumb, you're pretty much doing what you can as an individual. It's a hard problem to kick as an individual because it's systemic. Everything in our world has now become designed to be disposable and convenient and to utilize or overutilize plastic. So there's only so much you can do as an individual. But that does take us to the second point, which is effectively political action to get behind larger choices as a society, and those are regulatory, to try to regulate the production and overuse of single-use plastic.
Well, that segues perfectly into our next question, which is that there's a bill pending right now in the New York State Legislature that has approximately, I think, 114 combined co-sponsors in the Assembly and Senate. It's called the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act, and I know that you've been very involved, Beyond Plastics has been very involved in this process. Can you outline the major goals and objectives of this bill and why it's so important for us to support it?
No problem. We are really excited about this bill because it ticks all the major boxes that we know we need in order to reduce this crisis. And the first is if your tub is overflowing with water, you need to turn off the tap before you can clean it up. So we need to turn off the production tap on needless single-use plastics, largely packaging. So that's the packaging part, the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. The bill will call for a 50% reduction in plastic packaging over a period of 12 years. So there's a glide path in there. It will be, you know, not sudden, and manufacturers will be able to phase in lower and lower rates of plastic packaging. But it does a lot of other things too. It's called an extended producer responsibility bill, which I think of as you make it, you take it. If you're a manufacturer, you have to have an end plan for what you're making, or you have to make it possible for the larger public to have an end plan. So this one levies fees on plastic, on packaging that's not recyclable, has what's called an eco-modulated fee. And it means that the producers have to pay money to support recycling infrastructure, to support waste pickup, to support the cleanup of all of this packaging that's going out into the world and is not effectively recycled, won't break down, and is overflowing trash bins. So that's in there also. And then my favorite piece of this bill is that it reduces the load of known toxins that can go into the creation of plastic. There are quite a lot of chemicals that we know a lot about. Sometimes they're referred to as the dirty dozen, though there are a lot more than that, that we know can be substituted out. They're not necessary in the way that they're being used. Those include things like bisphenol A, bisphenol S, PFAS, some of those flame retardants. So this bill requires a phase out of about 19 of the most toxic of those chemicals, which would make the remaining packaging much less hazardous to human health.
And this is in New York, but as goes New York and sometimes California, so goes the rest of the country because we're such a huge market, right?
Very much so. Yeah. And we're also really persnickety in the way that we pass our legislation. So with just about every interest group out there taking a look at the bills that are coming along, you know that it's been weighed in on by everybody and their cousin. So by the time it passes here, it can pass just about anywhere. And other states know that. New York state legislation can often be model legislation elsewhere in the country.
Yay, go New York. So Megan, we are running out of time rapidly. So where can listeners go for more information about what we've discussed today, and how can they find you, connect with you if they want to?
Well, the Beyond Plastics website is a great place to start. If you go to beyondplastics, it's a plural, .org, you'll find all kinds of fact sheets, information about this bill, whom to call to help to help it over the finish line, and anything else you want to know about plastic, including how to contact us.
Wonderful. Well, Megan Wolf, Health Policy Director at Beyond Plastics, we thank you so much for the work that you and your colleagues do on our behalf. And this is really critically important work, and everyone should really pay attention and support this bill, even though I'm not supposed to say that, but I'm saying it. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Stay tuned next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.